Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the Boxing News podcast. We're back after a week's break. You were away last week, weren't you?
Probably.
Was it Thursday, Friday last week you were not here? I think it was.
There was so much going on. Yeah. Yeah, I was away. I've been moving house.
That's it. Yeah, you've moved to Brixton, haven't you? Okay, so apologies to people for us not managing to do it last week. You know, sometimes I do get some rather irate messages on social media when we don't do well, but we are such a small team here that when one of us isn't in, it does become quite tricky to fulfil obligations with the podcast, but we do genuinely enjoy doing it and we do genuinely do our best to do it every week.
And those irate messages are mostly from me.
Okay, right, so there has been a lot going on in the world of boxing, not all of it in a boxing ring. The biggest news obviously is that the Tyson Fury Vladimir Klitschko fight has been, we're told, postponed as opposed to cancelled. But even so, it was pretty big news because you went along to the press conference a week ago last Wednesday. Yesterday. And I had a feeling something would happen there, but I certainly didn't have a feeling that Tyson Fury would turn up as Batman. What was going through your mind at that point, and what did you take from that whole thing? Because when the fight was cancelled, without mentioning any names, I did speak to one or two journalists, and some really respected people felt that Vladimir Klitschko saw something in Tyson Fury that he didn't like. Not that he's kind of gonna not fight him, just that he thought, hang on, I might need a bit more time to get ready for this maniac.
I mean, yeah, it's just hard to think of Klitschko being spooked, because he is unflappable. It didn't really seem, even though Tyson Fury was sort of in extraordinary form in the press conference, Klitschko didn't seem rattled as far as I could tell. Though surely he can't have been expecting Batman to show up and to wrestle the Joker, but it is the timing. It does seem weird because Klitschko seemed absolutely fine and focused and serious at the press conference, and then literally 2 days later the fight suddenly off, or at least we're told it's going to be postponed. Because like, how much, you know, you would have had to get back to Germany, how much training would he have been doing? It's all pretty bizarre. But he did say he'd been training more frequently than usual. He'd upped his training from 3 sessions a day to 4. Like you said that at the press conference, he is older, so an increased training load can cause injury. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe he just watched Klitschko, he just watched Fury rolling around with the Joker and just thought, I don't need this.
He does need that, really.
Well, it would surely have sent their pay-per-view sales to the roof. Everyone will be talking about it. That's why it's a shame, you know, I think it's a shame itself, because interest would have sort of peaked after that press conference and you'd have a nice month's build-up to the big fight. And I just think when fights are postponed, even if they're rescheduled, it does take the sort of steam out of them.
What was the reaction at the press conference? Because I've seen Tyson Fury in full flow before at these press conferences, and now and again you can look around, and particularly some of the older journalists that have been there, seen it, and they've been there for Muhammad Ali press conferences and what have you, they can be kind of shaking their heads and they're getting absolutely no enjoyment out of what can be at times quite childish humour. But did people seem to, was anybody kind of disgusted with what Tyson Fury was doing, or did everybody seem to be on board with the whole promotional drive of the thing?
I'm not sure. Obviously some journalists loved it. I thought the whole thing was hilarious. Those of us who want hits for our website, this is manna from heaven, this kind of
yeah.
stuff. But I think some of the national guys weren't overly impressed. And then I think it convinced some that, because at the press conference it was Fury who seemed the more agitated. it was Fury, he seemed a little more unsettled, so the press conference didn't make you think it would be sort of Klitschko backing off from the fight itself. And also, it was also a strange event in that there were a lot of sort of supporters and friends of Tyson there who were all hanging on his every word, cheery and laughing and not necessarily heckling Klitschko, but not paying him much respect, which he kind of been expecting. However, I mean, I was completely dumbfounded when Fury just took over the press conference. After Batman left, Fury came back in a regular suit, pretending he didn't know what had happened, which he stuck to all the way through, even afterwards when he was talking to journalists and someone asked him about Batman. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. But then he just took over the press conference. He sort of launched into a rant. And then he started saying, you asked me a question.
I saw some footage, actually. And I'm not sure where... I don't think it was the footage we had on our website. It was... there was obviously a fair few video cameras there. But I did see some footage of him asking the questions. And he was firing out, you know, you asked me a question. Then I saw you in the audience with your head down.
At that point, I was pretty dumbfounded by Batman, and by that point my mind had gone completely blank, and I thought, I really hope he doesn't ask me a question, because I don't even know what's going on anymore. Plus, I'm sitting next to Huey Fury by this point, and at one moment Tyson asked everyone thinks I'm not going to smash Klitschko, stand up, be a man, and make themselves counted. And yeah, even though I had to think Klitschko was a favourite in the fight, I was sitting next to Huey. There were lots of Tyson Fury supporters in the room. I thought, I'm just going to carry on live blogging.
Could have made a name for yourself there.
Having just seen Batman and the Joker literally roll up to my feet through a row of photographers, my valour was not what it had been.
Okay, so how much is this going to... I mean, we spoke to the Klitschko camp on Tuesday, and they were going to sit... They were adamant that the fight would be rescheduled. They're hoping it would be November 28th, and they were going to see a doctor today, which is Thursday, and then hopefully the world will find out what's going to happen with it at some point. Hopefully before the weekend, but it wouldn't surprise me now if it was next week. What does this mean for the preparation of both fighters? Let's say, for argument's sake, that it is November the 28th, so it's been put back a little over a month. There's been signs on social media of what Tyson Fury's been. Initially, he was obviously very, very angry. Yeah. Since then, he seems to have calmed somewhat. He's been running up and down the streets of Morecambe along the seafront, inviting members of the public to join him, while also saying that he plans to be Morecambe's MP in the future. It's all...
Is there even an election going on, or is this...
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I don't think there would be at this time, would there? how difficult is it going to be for him? He's a complex character, Tyson Fury, and when everything is in place for him in regards boxing, he's a formidable fighter in the ring, I believe, an underrated one. But things like this, you sense, may not help him in the long run, all this disruption, because he will have to get himself back in the mindset if he's having a fight, if it does turn out that he's being rescheduled for November 28th.
Yeah, no, I think it is disruptive, because it obviously breaks up his preparations. He'll have to... well, have a rest and then make sure he's, you know, and then make sure he can peak for a different date. And there's that element of doubt, because he's had David Haye cancel on him a couple of times, so I would imagine that makes it harder to train and be focused and motivated when you've got this sort of element of doubt. Is the fight even going to happen? So I think if it is a battle for control, I think Klitschko has taking some of the control back, because it's more than it is now Klitschko can say when or if the fight's going to happen.
When things kind of keep happening, it becomes harder and harder to ignore them. You mentioned there the David Haye cancellations. Chisora, I believe, pulled out as well of a date for the rematch last year before it was rescheduled.
Because the Fury Chisora 2 was rescheduled a couple of times.
Yeah, so I mean, even if we find out on Monday or we find out tomorrow, it's all systems go for November 28th. There's a concern that Tyson Fury will kind of just be waiting for it to happen again anyway, and may not be as focused as he would have been.
That's pretty unlucky. That track record,
it really is
out on the sort of fight at that stage. So it sort of has really affected him over the last couple of years, potentially key years for how he's developed as a fighter.
Definitely, I think psychologically is the biggest. It's where it's hurt him the hardest. Regards Klitschko, he's not getting any older. He's 39, is he?
He's not getting any older.
Not getting any younger, even.
That doctor you're seeing today,
I'm not.
Pretty powerful.
I'm not getting any older. I am not. I haven't changed a bit for many years.
Memory.
Will it affect Vladimir Klitschko? Stop, start to the training. Let's also remember how the career of Vitaly Klitschko kind of came to an end, not his most recent period as WBC champion, but when he retired in about 2004, that ultimately was a consequence of his body just kept breaking down. He couldn't fulfil an obligation to fight Hasim Rakhman. Is there a danger now that we start to see signs where Vladimir's body is starting to break down if we're to take his injury to be genuine?
Yeah, I think age must be catching up with him. So he seemed, you know, with his sort of swimming and not doing any running and that kind of stuff, I think he's obviously takes measures to kind of prolong his career and the way he trains, but sooner or later he's going to catch up with us, you know, with us all, except for you, Matt.
Apart from me, yeah.
You know, so perhaps this is a, you know, perhaps this is a sign. Perhaps he needs to be reducing the amount of training he does rather than increasing it.
So this time last week, before the fight was cancelled, before it was postponed, you were still favouring Klitschko, right?
Yeah, don't tell Tyson Fury.
Who does this postponement benefit the most, do you feel?
Probably Klitschko more.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly lots of, as we were saying, sort of, I think it's less disruptive for him. Not ideal, but it's certainly, you know, it's more of a disturbance for Fury's training and for his preparations.
Okay, so you're now more convinced that should they fight, Vladimir Klitschko will win.
I'm afraid so. But I still, you know, I still think he's getting older.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
No, but you know, I don't think...
You don't know he's getting older, you just think...
I think he's getting older. No, but so I don't think it's an easy night for Klitschko.
There's a school of thought
that, you know, Fury has been open to a big right hand down the middle. If anyone can deliver that shot, it's Klitschko. Therefore, an easy night for Klitschko. But I think Fury will be big and a handful, and it's going to be harder for Klitschko to sort of mess him around and contain him.
Okay, so there was another heavyweight in action over the weekend, and it very, very much went under the radar in this country. I suspect it wasn't exactly making front page news over in America, to be honest with you, but WBC champion Deontay Wilder retained his WBC title. I've seen bits and bobs of it on YouTube. He looked decent, he looked fairly impressive. He won in the 11th round. But the fact that it wasn't picked up in this country, where we are blessed with a station like Box Nation, which does tend usually to show things like this, kind of speaks volumes about Deontay Walters, Deontay Wilder's profile, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when he beat Bermain Stiverne in January, and there was a real feeling that he, you know...
The next big thing.
Yeah, it really looked that way. Now, the fact that he's fought two very much unknown heavyweights in his opening defences kind of speaks volumes. So I almost feel like he's less marketable now than he was before he won the title. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's damaging for your career taking these steps down. Actually, like, look, an example like Leo Santa Cruz, he was fighting nobodies, and so he'd gone from being one of the, you know, the most, you know, hotly tipped super bantamweights in the world to being sort of written off, and actually taking the Ademaris fight did him the world of good because it sort of put him back up there. You know, Wilder is going from Bermain Stiverne, a world champion, to these guys that, you know, are really stepped down from, they're not really world contenders, they're stepped down.
No, I mean, they're stepped down. I mean, I think if you used to find independent rankings, neither would have figured in the top 20, for example.
Like Eric Molina had been stopped by Areola, Johan Duhalpes, and, you know, hadn't won the European, you know, he wasn't a European level heavyweight, he hadn't beaten the European champion, he'd beaten Manuel Char on what, a majority or split decision, and Manuel Char's not very good, dare I say it, I know he's been shot, so I hurt his feelings, but, you know, his claim to fame was that he was going to be in a fight with David Hare, which never happened, and that sort of maybe that sort of shifted the perception that he was up at that level, but he never was, really.
Okay, the WBC have since ordered Deontay Wilder versus Alexander Povetkin, which is definitely more like what we want to see from Deontay Wilder, but what chance do you give him against Povetkin after the kind of company he's been keeping for the last 6 months? It's a huge step up all of a sudden, isn't it? Whereas Stiverne, it was almost, you were going in that right direction, but you feel like he's taken a few steps back recently.
Yeah. So I think Povetkin is very dangerous, but Wilder, he's got a good jab, and he does have power. So he does seem all-round sort of more athletic than Povetkin, so maybe those tools will be enough, but I think Povetkin's sort of the better boxer. And Povetkin did look really good in his most recent fight, but he was very poor against Klitschko, so maybe he does find it harder to deal with those bigger men. So it's but, you know, maybe I would pick Wilder to win, but that's more on hope than past track record.
Yeah.
But it's a good fight.
We've got a report in this week's issue that kind of goes into more detail about Deontay Wilder's most recent fight. But the author of the piece kind of does make the point that, and I think it's a fair point to make, in that in today's era of kind of splintered titles, we have got a situation where Deontay Wilder is still a world champion, and also probably still about prospect level as well. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah, I think I've probably said on this podcast that he's fighting the kind of people who are kind of the level of people that Anthony Joshua has been fighting.
Yeah.
Except one's a prospect and one's a world champion.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on, what else happened last weekend? Have you from Buglioni?
Brave effort.
I thought he did okay. Well, no, I thought he did really, really well, in fact, to last the 12 rounds against Fedor Chudinov. There was that slightly controversial incident at the midway point where Chudinov got clouted to the ground well after the bell. But Buglioni did well to last the talk. I didn't go a lot. I mean, I did see a lot of people saying it should have been stopped. I didn't feel like that at the time. What about you?
I was at a wedding at the time. So I was pretty neutral on whether it should have been stopped.
Okay.
But I agree with you in all things, Matt.
No, I mean, I felt that...
He's had a punishing career at Buglione, and he's only young. Like the Kamitsky fight, he even had a war with Lee Markham, plus this fight.
Andrew Robinson as well he had a war with.
Yeah.
I think...
He's entertaining to watch, but maybe could do with a bit of a rest.
I think that's a good point. He certainly could do the rest now. I noticed on Facebook, though, he was back in the gym on Monday, I believe.
Really?
After this, yeah, looking a little bit worse for wear, as you would after a fight like that. He never really looked like he was going to win it. There was that bit in the middle rounds where he became a bit more competitive. But I think by the midway point of the seventh, it really looked like there was only one winner. But he was never... I mean, you know, we've all got our own opinions and what have you. There was never any point where I was kind of looking through my fingers wishing the referee would stop it. It was not, like, sustained.
Yeah, it's still a hard one when it's clear the other guy has no chance of winning, but there's not quite enough.
Yeah, but you can also, you look at it from the other side, and okay, admittedly, although the punch came after the bell that dropped Judinov, it probably dropped him.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he obviously has the power.
He's a puncher.
Power that could trouble the champion. I think well done to Buglione. I think you make a great point there that perhaps now it's time just to take a step back for a little while. Manuel Stewart always used to say, after a fighter has lost and taken a lot of punishment, they should really think about spending as much of the next 12 months out of the ring as possible if they're young enough to do that. And it allows the body to heal, it allows the brain to heal, etc., etc. I can't imagine Buglione will be out for that long. He's certainly one of the most exciting fighters in the country, but without wishing to be disrespectful, I sense that is the closest he'll get to ruling the world.
Yeah. That doesn't mean he won't be in quite a lot of exciting TV fights.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It seems like he can get himself into a fight at whatever level he's boxing at. If it's one he should be winning, he could still get drawn into a scrap.
Yeah, exactly.
And in this case, you know, Fedor Chudinov, I think, is very good. Like, how much of a factor do you think Fedor Chudinov can be in the world at super middleweight?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, he more or less dominated this contest. I suppose he was expected to, but he looked impressive to me. He looks solid operator. He's certainly not unbeatable. But if you take this performance and you also look at the performance against Felix Sturm, and he's certainly...
That's a good win.
He's certainly a top five guy, I would say, in the world. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, would I pick... I think someone like George Groves, for example, would have a problem with Shudinov, which is a compliment, which is a compliment indeed to Shudinov. But, you know, we'll see what happens with him. We'll see what happens with him in the future. Something else that was being said over the weekend on the internet on various places was the kind of validity as this bout as a world championship as a consequence of the WBA's rather infuriating and puzzling decision to have regular titles and super titles.
It's not helpful.
I mean, for regular readers of the magazine, as we feel it's our duty to report on what titles are at stake in each fight, that doesn't mean we always approve of those titles. And you can, thing is, with this WBA regular world title, it does confuse Max, because Andre Ward, I believe, is still super champion, even though he hasn't fought in the division for such a long time now.
Yeah.
But as a consequence of that title existing, in my mind, this regular title is not a world title. I didn't view it as such beforehand, and I didn't particularly view it as such during. I know it would have meant the world to Buglione, and it no doubt means the world to Shudinov. But it's just a bit of a depressing state of affairs. I mean, what's your take on this whole WBA thing? You know, with the regular
yeah,
and the
I think
super
really
titles?
You've got to look at the super title as being the WBA world title, really. It's only in super middleweight, actually, you have their... You know, Andre Ward still has the super title, but he hasn't fought a super middleweight for a long, long time now. So it does, it all muddies the waters. You know, I think, you know, we've all got our heads around there being four major titles, but it does make it a mess when you're then creating more and more like regular and interim. And, you know, it's like the WBA are devaluing their own title by having a super and regular.
They are. I think the thing that makes it even more farcical is the fact that if you go onto the WBA's very, very own website, this isn't coming from anyone else, this is coming from the WBA, and you go down and you look at the rankings, even if there was I'm not saying we want more super champions or more regular champions, but if the super title was appeared in every division, perhaps we could understand it, but it just seems to be every now and again they crop up.
Yeah.
And also, in certain divisions, within their rankings, on their website, the super title has got two or three different names. I think people, it's called I can't think now, but they call it all different names. In certain divisions, a regular title is called the regular title or the world title. There's no uniformity there. Which senses to me that they don't really know what they're doing with it. So if they don't really know what they're doing with it, why on earth should we even pay any attention? It's a bit of a shame, and you kind of feel sorry for guys like Frank Buglioni a little bit, in that, you know, in their minds they're fighting for a world title, but it's a pretty diluted version of it. Yeah. And also people like Scott Quigg, yeah. Scott Quigg as well, who's in a division where there's a super champion, and he's got the regular or world title, and you know, you don't want to devalue what they're doing or what, how, you know, they're fantastic achievements, but ultimately it's hard for me anyway to say that they're true world champions.
Exactly, because, you know, their achievements are significant and these are sort of world level fights, but you know, I'm sure what every fan thinks is that there shouldn't be so many world titles. And in this particular case with Buglioni and Chudinov, if Andre Ward hasn't fought at super middleweight for so long, why isn't Chudinov just their world champion?
No idea. Okay, so let's just quickly move on. I'm going to have to call it a day soon. Fairly busy weekend. We've got some seriously in-depth previews in the magazine. There's reports from... a great deal of shows last weekend. We've got a new feature in the magazine as well called The Week, which we're quite pleased with. It kind of goes through, kind of takes you through the boxing week from the point of view of boxing news, and we're quite proud of that. There's also there's an exclusive with Roy Jones in there. There's all the news about the British Boxing Border Control Awards, which is a really good night. But just to finish off, let's look at a couple of the fights that are happening this weekend. Now, from a British perspective, one of the most interesting ones, and perhaps bizarre ones, is Ovil McKenzie's shot at IBF Cruiserweight champion Victor Emilio Ramirez. And unlike the WBA title that we just mentioned, this is the IBF title. It's one of the four one of the four main recognised belts. He's come in at 2.5 weeks' notice, McKenzie. He's one of those guys that's always in good shape, but even someone that's in good shape aesthetically doesn't necessarily mean they're in good shape to fight. 2.5 weeks against Victor Emilio Ramirez, never fought anyone at that level before. What chance do you give Ovil McKenzie of coming home with a belt? I'll also add that Victor Emilio Ramirez comes from Buenos Aires in Argentina, and that's where the fight's taking place.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see him doing it, but I'm interested to see the fight because Ovil's getting it on such short notice, and, you know, he has upset people at a lower level
before, but do I see him as a world level fighter? Sadly not, but I'd love it if there was a fairy tale ending and he could win the title. But he's up against it in almost every way.
He is up against it, but we have seen him. He's going to be very, very dangerous in the early going, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is that his best chance? I mean, I wrote the preview. I won't say what I've said in it, apart from the fact that I thought his best chance was somehow to catch Ramirez early.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, he said he's happy with 2.5 weeks' notice or whatever it is, but especially at that short notice, surely down the stretch he'll find it tough. Like, he's not going to be in peak fighting shape, so maybe he's just got to put everything into the first three rounds. But I think that's the general view of Oval, that over the first three rounds of a fight, he's as dangerous as anyone.
Ramirez was, you know, people may say, well, Ramirez wasn't training for McKenzie, but he was training for a fight, and that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Over in California, is it? We've got Lucas Patesi against Victor Postol. That's a good fight, isn't it?
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, Postol's, because I think Matisse's looked pretty good since Danny Garcia exposed him to an extent.
Yeah.
He looked great against Ruslan Provodnikov. I know people have been saying this is like a fight of the year in some quarters, but I thought Matisse won that really convincingly. I thought it was a case of Provodnikov just managed to take those hard punches. But someone who's got sort of good boxing skills, who is a more talented technical boxer, could make things tough for Matisse if Postol's not going to be there to be hit, if he's going to be awkward. So I think this one's going to be a very interesting fight. I'm definitely going to be staying up late to watch it.
Moving on, one of our favourite fighters and human beings, Adrian Broner, is in the action over the weekend. He's been gifted shot a title. It's one of those just weird WBA belts.
Does the WBA have a super light welterweight?
Do they have a super 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 lightweight champion?
Yeah.
I don't know. Perhaps they don't.
But it would mean
no. They do. They've got they've got an interim, haven't they? It's just interim. I think they've got. I don't know because there was some objection. From the interim champion is Jose Benavidez, and there was some objection from the Benavidez camp about this fight being made for the vacant title, which you can understand, I think.
Yeah,
I think
if they got the interim belt, yeah, then they should get the shot, shouldn't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. So Adrian Broner, now he goes in against, how do you pronounce that, John? Khabib Alak.
Oh, Alakverdiev.
Alakverdiev. Now I saw him against Jesse Vargas a few years ago. I think he was on the Bradley Pacquiao 2 undercard, and was it Jesse Vargas?
So Jesse Vargas has beaten him, but
yeah.
Was Jesse Vargas lucky?
Yes, he was. I thought he was lucky to get a result. Now, but I don't think he's fought since then, but on that night I was relatively impressed, and it wouldn't surprise me if he did the business against Broner this weekend. I'm just putting it out there.
Look, it wouldn't surprise me if Broner didn't make the weight on Friday. So he's been gifted a chance to, on paper, be a four-division world champion at the tender age of 26 or whatever. But Broner being Broner, you could just see him throwing away that chance.
Who's he lost to recently? Sean Porter. Marcus Maidana gave him a bit of a hiding. Broner, in both of those fights, showed flashes of what he can do.
Yeah.
And showed flashes of a brilliant fighter that we all thought he would go on to be not that long ago. But I mean, let's say he loses this one. What can he possibly say after that?
Yeah,
because surely he's at world level, but he's not at championship level, and he'll have proved it three times now.
Yeah, but everyone loves watching him lose, so. Maybe he'll just start getting served up to people and become the world's richest journeyman.
Hmm. are we likely to see? You said there, he's only 26 years old. Potentially he could, you know, be... His best years could still be ahead of him. That's feasible, isn't it?
In theory, but I don't know. He just... It doesn't inspire confidence that he's, you know, that he's learned his lessons. Certainly the Porter fight didn't. And, you know, if people are creatures of habit, and if he keeps going back to his bad habits, that he hasn't been able to shape, you know, to get himself out, he hasn't been able to get himself out of that rut. I just can't see him fulfilling his potential. Like, as a lightweight, he looked like a tremendous fighter. But...
Yeah, I can see him losing this. I can see him losing this the more I think about it. If he does lose, one would sense that that is pretty much his career over at world title level, you would think.
I don't know, the rules don't seem to apply to him, because his last fight was losing effort to Sean Porter.
Okay, but you'd be surprised if he was... You'd be surprised... Okay, I'm not saying he won't get any more opportunities, yeah, but you would be surprised if he was to take any of them.
Yeah.
If that is the case, if we have seen the last of Adrian Broner's world title haul, which was over three weights, would he be regarded as a bust?
As in, what do you mean as in?
As in he just completely failed to fulfil his potential despite winning three titles at three different weights.
Yeah, I think on paper his achievements are tremendous, but you know, if you haven't had the big fights and won them, it's hard in this age of there being so many world titles floating about to really give him too much credit. You know, his most memorable fight will be getting beaten up by Marcus Maidana.
It's true. It's true, I agree with you. Look, we're going to have to call it a day there, but do get involved with the magazine this week, as well as everything we've already mentioned. I mean, it's packed with exclusive interviews. We were ringside for a lot of the biggest events last weekend. We've got some in-depth previews for everything coming up this weekend, and we've also got a really nice feature on the 40th anniversary of the Thriller in Manila, which actually is today.
Today, right now.
One of my favourite fights to watch even now, and I've seen it so many times, but I will happily sit down for an hour and lose myself in the savagery of that incredible, incredible rubber match. But yeah, we speak to some people and we do reflect on it. So get this week's boxing news for the lowdown on all things boxing. And thanks everyone for your continued support, and we will be back next week.